that's been suggested. That's, as I've just discussed, my view is that the determination of the form of the upgrades that are required is actually done at the front end of the process through the road network integration plan, and that monitoring would otherwise run the risk of picking up other unrelated traffic performance issues outside of the prior determination of the upgrade in respect of the hub project.
So just to make sure I have this clear in my mind, you're on board with the principles of considering the intersections as identified in 81D, so small d, but you just think it should be in a different condition.
Yes, so the detail around those, in my mind, gets picked up at that front end condition around the integration plan.
Thank you.
That's all I've got on the conditions that I had.
I'm just also interested in 82 Part D as well, as to updating your operational traffic management plan once the Ring Road or Bunnythorpe bypass is in. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Similarly, with that condition, that the determination of timing of works and what the form of the works will be on the roading network will include the considerations of when the bypasses come on stream or not, and what other works are coming on stream, and what the timing of those works are, to again be determined at the front end.
Thank you.
So that concludes your oral presentation.
I've got nothing further.
Well, as I said at the start, we're going to play to our strengths, so Commissioner Mackinson is going to start off the question on transport. Sorry, did you hear that? Commissioner Mackinson is going to lead off on the transport question.
Ready when you are.
There you go.
So I'd like to ask some general questions around some fundamental principles for me, and then probably take you through evidence and order, and there may be a little bit of overlap over your summary, a little bit of going around the houses, but I'm sure we'll get there. So the first question I have is around the Palmerston North traffic model. And you know, I understand from what you've said today that its use was agreed with Palmerston North City Council in advance. Becca has undertaken a validation report, and that's then been peer-reviewed, and that was sort of 2014-15. And that you also prepared a review of that on behalf of Waka Kotahi in about 2019, and that was to assess whether the model was forecasting traffic volumes as expected, and you're actually seeing those volumes come through on the network. You also sort of set out that you did some checks on the amount of traffic coming out of the Tremaine Ave model zone, what's coming out of the Northeast Industrial Zone model zone. And then at, I think, section 2 of Appendix A of your evidence in chief, which is that 2021 memo.
Yes.
You discuss using 2020 and 2021 Palmerston North Council traffic counts to verify the accuracy of the model. The question I have is whether those were just link counts, or did you do any intersection counts, delay counts, check queuing at some of those key intersections?
So that was a link count comparison.
So when I look at table one and table two, I'm seeing a consistent underestimation by the model of the observed traffic volumes. Now, I understand there's obviously, you know, model world and real world are never the same. And there is an acceptance of a degree of error within models. My concern is around the fact that it is consistently low. You know, there's no overs unders that I might normally expect to see within a model. So can you just explain or draw some conclusions on how that might affect the outcome of your overall assessment of effects if we have a traffic model that is consistently low based on the observed link counts?
Yeah, so the questions that you're posing there are not indifferent to the questions that Ms. Fraser was posing as well, and that was the purpose for us pulling together this further detail. At a broad level, this in my mind is the importance of the management plan conditions that we are presenting here. Traffic volumes and traffic patterns are not a precise science, and we need to have some flexibility around how to best manage and determine appropriate road upgrades and improvements into the future. So that I haven't got an issue with the quantum of that difference between the modelled and counted information. But in saying that, it's been important for me to recommend to Kiwi Rail that we have got this flexibility going forward to continuously review and agree and determine with the road controlling authorities as to what the appropriate solutions are and what the appropriate time of those solutions are, which will in part pick up how traffic patterns are changing into the future.
So you said also that you haven't undertaken any intersection counts for model validation. Have you done any at all in terms of modelling the operation of individual intersections, or have those volumes come straight from the Palmy North area traffic model?
So those, for the SIDRA analyses that we've reported, they have come from the area traffic model.
Are you concerned that they may not actually be representative of what happens on the ground, particularly if there's been no review of queue lengths, delays?
I'm not particularly concerned about that, particularly for the purpose of this notice requirement application, where the model is being used as a tool and indicator as to where hotspots are in the network, or where they might be, where there might be hotspots in the future, and that's satisfied me that we've been able to put some reasonable judgment around those spots. But again, the relevance of the network integration plan, to be sure that we're capturing the right things at the right time in terms of scale of improvements and what those improvements are into the future.
You just mentioned hotspots, and that brings me nicely to my next question. What has been your philosophy in identifying where the hotspots are on the network that are relevant to the freight hub?
there's been a couple of approaches to that. One is understanding the existing and future baseline position of the network without the freight hub, and understanding what areas are performing well and what areas aren't and might otherwise be due for upgrade and improvement irrespective of the hub. And then the scenario that loads the freight hub scenario onto the network, and what changes might occur in terms of performance of links and at intersections in response to the freight hub traffic. And what we've used as an indicator there are the sensitive levels of service around level of service E and F as a starting indicator of what locations may change in response to the traffic generation of the freight hub.
Have you used percentage change in demand at better functioning intersections as well? The reason I'm asking is obviously with this sort of development, you don't want to be assessing every intersection in the whole region. So there has to be some form of winnowing process to take out the ones that are actually of no interest because there's no significance of effect. Level of service is one way of doing that, but another is to think about significance of change in demand, because you may have an intersection that's operating well at present, your level of service D, it's acceptable, but through changes of demand, it may change that level of service. So it's just whether you've considered that as one of your guiding principles or not.
Level of service has been our primary indicator from the model to guide us as to determining where those key changes are in terms of performance.
So changing tack slightly onto road safety, and this is at paragraph 5.24 of your evidence.
I just want to ask a question that follows from that, because I may not be able to frame it if there's a gap. You said that in response to variations between reality and the model, that it was critical to have some ability to test and prove and vary, and that's how it was provided for. I don't know where that is provided for in the conditions. And are you describing something in the nature of an equivalent analysis to verify the results, to authenticate the results that you predict? Is that what you're describing?
What I was describing there is that there, under the, if I pull to the right one in terms of the, again, the road network integration plan, which I think was 45. No, it's 50, 50, from 47, 48, 49, at 50, you've got the particular provisions in there around the road network integration plan.
Yeah.
My view is that under clause C there, in order to determine the form of what those changes are, that form needs to be determined with a bit of science, so that science would include assessments of the type that we've been talking about, of existing future traffic conditions, capacities.
You mean other than just modelling, but actual data collection or something, is what you're thinking?
Well, the modelling is informed by data collection.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm trying to understand, you've been identified a problem, which is between the difference between the model and reality, and your answer was, well, some of that can be picked up in the way in which iteratively the integration plan works, but I can't see that iterative model, and what you're referring there to is a different proposition, which is when you do the design of the upgrades and changes, you start to then do assessments. So I'm just not quite following you in a practical way, but it's because I'm not an engineer.
So starting with the differences, which the model differences, which sparked this conversation, I haven't got an issue with the scale of differences that are shown between the model and the actuals. I understand council are of that same view as well, and those areas where there are outliers of a greater difference, the absolute differences are small because they're on roads that don't carry a lot of traffic. I understand the point that there is a difference there, but in my view, the scale of that difference is not something to be concerned about. We then come to how, off the basis of this information and going forward, how is the timing of improvements and what the improvements are, how is that going to be determined as the freight hub progresses? That is the aspect that's captured in the road network integration plan.
Yeah, C particularly.
Yep.
Thank you.
So if we can go to 5.24 of your evidence, Mr. Georgeson. This is around road safety.
I've got it in front of me.
Okay. So within the study area where you assessed the crash record, you state there are about 12% of crashes involved heavy commercial vehicles. Could you comment on whether that's an expected level of crashes involving that type of vehicle in your experience?
The 12% number is not indifferent to the percentage of heavy trucks that are actually on those roads within that study area. So the crash rate is commensurate with the volume of trucks.
Thank you. You also go on to talk about the infrastructure risk rating approach to consider comparative road safety now and in future with road changes, traffic changes. Within the IRR process, how subjective are some of those elements that you need to consider?
It's true that there's an element of that, and again, we've used that tool as an indicator of the scale of difference between existing situations versus proposed situations, and how that scale of safety may vary from or in a situation where there's increased traffic.
So
it's the relative difference between a benchmark position versus a future position that's important to us.
So my understanding of the process is that change in traffic volume forms part of that assessment. How do you consider an increase in heavy commercial vehicles within that overall traffic volume as a percentage?
Yeah, my understanding is that it's banded in terms of changes from level to level within the tool. And that's inclusive of truck traffic.
But my concern is around that if you increase truck traffic and you have an existing 10% heavies, and we increase overall traffic volume into the future, it's whether the methodology keeps that 10% truck traffic as a static element, or whether it allows for the fact that realistically we can expect a higher percentage of heavy commercial vehicles within the overall volume of traffic, given that this is a freight hub that's potentially being developed.
My understanding is that the tool's not that sensitive in dealing with that, and that's why we've just used it as one indicator of what the changes might be from scenario to scenario. If it helps, I can. I haven't got the detail in front of me, but if it helps, I can get you a little bit more information on that as to the those precision levels that you're talking about.
If you could, that would be helpful. So that leads on to my question on if this tool doesn't consider the effects of increased truck traffic on road safety, how have you taken it into account within your assessment of road safety effects overall?
So there's two approaches that we've taken to the safety. So there's the collective risk, which relates to the actual position, and then there's the IRR rating, which is an assessment based independent of the historic crash history. Again, it's probably useful if I can come back to you on that micro detail, if that's going to be useful.
Please, it is a concern.
Okay. I'll come back to you on that.
So my next question, questions are around permitted baseline. And if I can take you to around paragraph 6.8 of your main evidence. And again, I think this is something that Ms. Fraser raised. Now, I understand within the model that you have assessed the amount of traffic coming out of the Northeast Industrial Zone, both existing. You've made an assessment of what is expected to come out of that zone in future. Now, from a practical sense, obviously, we don't want to double count by loading all of the freight hub traffic onto the network on top of the Northeast Industrial Zone traffic, because that would essentially double your 5,100 vehicles per day overlap. But that's from a model space sense. But from a practical sense, Kiwi Rail would be the absorbers of that amount of traffic that is planned for the network. And my understanding of the zone rules for the Northeast Industrial Zone is that there is a restriction on building size once you get above 500 square meters. And once you pass that permitted level, discretion starts to be applied to resource consenting and development. I haven't identified any list of required infrastructure to support development within the Northeast Industrial Zone. So in my understanding, we have a situation where development is allowed for and expected to occur, but the complete assessment of traffic effects hasn't been undertaken yet. And at some point, if road safety or capacity is eroded, anybody developing within the Northeast Industrial Zone would have to mitigate that effect. So given, as I mentioned before, Kiwi Rail is essentially becoming that person who uses up the road network capacity. Isn't there a risk that you've actually underestimated the impact of the freight hub on the background road network because you have discounted about 5,000 vehicles per day effect?
starting with the scenario of assumptions and direction that council are taking with the development of the Northeast Industrial Zone, there are a series of committed works and programmed works to enable that continued development. There's examples of those are the work that council is, the physical works council is about to embark in the reforming of Richardson's Line. And that's the section of Richardson's Line that extends back from Roberts Line across the frontage of the new Progressive Distribution Centre and heading further west.
There's some sites being developed on the other side, an extension area, aren't there?
Being part of the Northeast Extension Zone.
Yeah, triggering that need for
the roundabout I was mentioning before is part of those infrastructure works. There's a roundabout proposed at the El Prado railway intersection. And those are the kinds of improvements that we have provisioned for in our baseline or do minimum scenarios, anticipating that there will be a series of works undertaken to continue to support growth and development in the area, irrespective of the freight hub. Was there more to that question?
I need to think about that one. I might have to come back to you. Okay, paragraph 9.9. This is a matter of clarification for me, please.
Yep, got that.
So at paragraph 9.9, you're stating that the 2041-51 traffic volume on Railway Road is expected to be about 8,900 vehicles per day. And the full build-out of the freight hub shows a traffic volume on Perimeter Road of around 9,600 vehicles per day. And the overall traffic generation of the freight hub is around 12,000 vehicles per day. How do those three numbers fit together?
Yeah. There's a number of traffic redistributions and dynamic changes and so on in response to the freight hub, and remembering that the freight hub has got a number of components to it, at least in the way in which it's been assessed in the modelling that I've presented. It includes, for example, the closure of Railway Road and the building of the Perimeter Road, but it also includes the likes of closure of Roberts Line level crossing and the redistribution of that traffic. So if we just take that as one example, the closure of Railway Road and the closure of Roberts Line here, at the moment there's a proportion of traffic using Railway Road that travels to and from Roberts Line. So part of the volume on Railway Road at the moment is in relation to that movement. Now with that level crossing being closed, that traffic volume that's currently making that movement needs to go elsewhere. One of the obvious choices that's demonstrated by the model is that that traffic instead chooses to use Stony Creek Road. So, as one example, that traffic doesn't come across to the new Perimeter Road, and also there's not a direct transfer of all of that traffic onto the perimeter road. Now that's just one example. The other aspect of that I think is important to mention is how the perimeter road is anticipated to operate in relation to the freight hub. And it's helpful to think about it in sections. So there's a section from Railway Road to the Richardson's Line roundabout. There's a section from there to the Roberts Line intersection. There's a section from there to the second access. There's a section to the third access, and then there's a section further round. The Richardson's Line access is anticipated to be the busier of the three connection points to the freight hub. So there is a quantum of additional traffic at this end of the perimeter road on Roberts Line here that's quite a lot bigger than the volume around this northern section of the perimeter road. And that's for a number of reasons. One, that's a primary access there. Also, the connections from there back into the northeast zone, all coming in via this southern part of the perimeter road, and that traffic not otherwise being present on the northern part of the perimeter road. So there's a scale difference.
So that 9,600 vehicles per day on the perimeter road, is that an average overall, or is that one end, the other end?
Yeah, that's more in relation to the effectively a screen line through the northerly end.
Magic word, that screen line. Bear with me, just scrolling through here. So I think in your rebuttal evidence, and you touched on it in your summary, you mentioned that the queuing space that you've allowed between the limit line on the main primary access roundabout and the internal level crossing within the site is around two trucks worth. How have you landed on that value as being an appropriate queuing length?
It was in part design influenced, but also in part, one, we certainly wanted to avoid an issue of trucks straddling a railway line. So as a minimum, that would be one truck length. Our view from a design perspective is that it was prudent to enable a clearance, particularly inbound, that would satisfy a volume up to those couple of trucks, but the option that we developed also provided for a buffer in terms of the road space as well. So in the event that there was an issue of queuing of more than two trucks, the design allows for an exclusive left turn in lane and an exclusive right turn lane at the roundabout. So in the event that there was more queuing, and that may happen from time to time, those queued vehicles are accommodated in lanes separate from other traffic through the roundabout.
You preempted my next question. The other piece I'm interested in is how do you provide that same queuing space on the southern approach to the roundabout, but from Richardson's line?
Yeah, in the design developed to date, the that queuing is provided for on the main line of the perimeter road, left turn and a right turn in, rather than on Richardson's line. Now, I mentioned before that the design development that's been done is, you know, buried into a finer grain of detail than what I would anticipate, and certainly the concept that preliminary design that's been developed will continue to be refined and developed as the project progresses.
Thank you. In your summary this morning, you took us to the strategic road network projects that Waka-Kotahi and Palmerston North Council are potentially considering. And they're split into short, medium, and long term. Obviously, I know you're not going to know exact timeframes, but in your experience, what sort of numbers of years might we expect those to represent?
Good. It's a good, a very good question for next Tuesday for Waka-Kotahi. There are some indicators in the council's long-term 10-year plan in terms of investment priorities through the next 10 years, which gives an indication of the quantum of spend that the council is looking at, which plays out over the course of that 10-year period of the plan. I can provide copies of the relevant pages of that to give you an idea of the scale of investment that council was looking at in terms of those strategic improvements.
That would be helpful, thank you. I just think back to conditions. I think condition 51A, that we discussed with
Mr. Skelton,
thank you, this morning, around providing a safe crossing from east to west side of the North Island main trunk. And obviously in condition 45, there is a list of level crossing safety impact assessments. In your view, if that condition 51A crossing is provided, would you expect to see that added on to the condition 45 list of where you would do a safety assessment?
I would expect that to be a fundamental part of 51A provision.
Thank you. You'd be pleased to hear we're nearly at the end. The only other question I have, or series of questions I have, relates to construction traffic effects on the network. Now, there is a need to import about 1.5 million cubic metres of fill, which involves a lot of trucks if rail can't be used. You've also got other materials that you need to bring in for the building. So we're expecting a fairly heavy construction traffic effect over a number of years. And you know, I accept your point that users of the road will not just be freight hub construction vehicles, you will have your background freight, you may have other construction projects. I appreciate there are difficulties around the use of visual inspection surveys to identify the wear and tear that is created on the road. And you state that it's not really fair for KiwiRail to be expected to pay for the impacts that might be caused by others. Are you aware of any other mechanism, such as a heavy vehicle impact fee, that could be applied that allows consideration of existing heavy vehicle demands on a road and allows you to monitorize the differential between existing and your construction traffic so that the extra wear and tear that you're creating is actually paid for by the person creating it rather than pushing all of that cost onto council and ratepayers.
Not aware of that specifically, but I am aware of instances where there has been a separate side agreement agreed with a roading authority that effectively provides some front-end science to what that would be the right word, erosion of the asset might be with extra unanticipated trucks on it. So I'm aware that that kind of approach has been taken before, but sitting outside of consent conditions.
Would you consider that sort of approach or a suitably worded condition appropriate in this particular instance, given the potential volume of construction traffic?
Yeah, that's a matter that we should have some separate conversations about in terms of what those alternate mechanisms might be.
I think, ma'am, that will be a matter as well for both Ms. Bell and legal submissions in relation to that. That point.
If they could, that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
And that leads me on to what is hopefully my last question. And this is around the foodstuffs access. And I think you stated in your summary this afternoon that an alternative, you accept that it may be harder for trucks to pull out of the foodstuffs access point. And one option for them would actually be to turn left, go on the roundabout, to then head back towards Palmerston North. And previously you've alluded to the fact that you don't believe it is incumbent on KiwiRail to assess the potential effects of the Bunnythorpe bypass or the ring road in any way, and that is incumbent on NZTA to sort that out. Could you not apply that same argument to your suggestion that actually foodstuffs should just turn left instead of turning right? Surely it's incumbent on KiwiRail to make sure that foodstuffs can continue to operate their site as they currently do without them having to accommodate yourselves.
Throughout the roading network, there's always changes and responses that need to be made as asset changes, as performance changes, and whether that be at intersections or individual property accesses in response to how manoeuvres might be done for council making changes to the asset. I was attempting to put forward a practical solution that may that may need to eventuate, and the fact that there is an option available for foodstuffs to continue to provide for their truck movements in the way that they do at the moment, albeit with a short U-turn around the roundabout. Now, that in itself has some extra time associated with it, but also at the moment trucks turning right out of the site and heading to the Roberts Line Railway Road intersection have also got a delay associated with that to turn into Railway Road. So in my mind, the quantum difference between a scenario of turning left out of the site and heading back towards Railway Road versus the delay that's encountered by those trucks at the moment is indifferent.
But it's still requiring a change on how foodstuffs would operate their site, and it's one that they may not wish to make. So I what I'm trying to understand is how you could potentially accommodate that change rather than forcing one on them, you know, that's by increasing traffic past their frontage that makes it difficult to turn right out. You know, how would you protect that movement that they currently do?
Wanting to avoid, I suppose, getting into, you know, too much detail at the moment, but the scenario that we've tested is for trucks to turn right out of the site as they do at the moment and giving way to traffic in both directions. A option might be to develop a driveway or intersection form that allows trucks to undertake a two-stage manoeuvre of crossing one direction of traffic and then crossing into or merging with the other direction of traffic. Now, that's getting into, you know, a level of detail, I think, that's beyond what's necessary at the moment. But, you know, those sort of options and responses are available any place in the network to address these sorts of changes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Georgeson. Just one question from me. Ms. Fraser has suggested that there should be a linkage between the site to the northeastern industrial zone. Whereabouts, if that was to occur, which I know you don't support, but where would that potentially be?
The two key connections for me are developing, existing and developing northeastern here. Connection here. The other connection out of northeast is at El Prado Drive, just off the plan in this corner here. My continued view is that managing those connections via those existing spines is the right solution, and that's the way in which council are continuing to develop this area as well. Connections on and off Richardson's line to connect back to Robert's line here, and continuing to rely on El Prado Drive as being sensible solutions to connect into the roading network.
Well, I understand that's your view. From reviewing what Ms. Fraser has said, what's your understanding of where she thinks the linkage should go? And obviously we'll ask Ms. Fraser when she comes up as well.
I'm not aware as to where her thoughts are at with that solution, but certainly my view is as I've said.
Not necessary. That's fine, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Georgeson. That's very helpful. And it's also time for afternoon tea. And Commissioner Makinson has left you with some homework.
Thank you.
So no further questions for us.
So we're back at 10 to 4.